It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
All right. Hey, everybody. Great to be with you here, Working Man's Beach, where it is blowing a gale. So some technical workarounds, and here we are with the Patrick Johnson Show for you today. It's a Thursday, and we're going to have Andrew Bays, ECU All-American punter, on the line with us here in just a little bit. We'll preview the spring game with Andrew. We'll also talk about one of our great local volleyball teams that is heading to a national event in the summer. And Andrew will be on to talk about that coming up here today on the Patrick Johnson Show. We have comments from Cliff Godwin, comments from Ethan Norby, who came in and was lights out, 4 2/3 innings, a career high for him, but more impressively, a 10 strikeout day, which was his career high. And what I thought was really interesting is, because that game was just dragging with ODU, and I know there were some runs scored early, but and there were a lot of pitching changes, but there just was no, the way ODU pitchers work, there was just not a lot of pace to that game. And Norby came in and the pace quickened, and he really picked things up and got into the zone. So we'll hear from those guys, Coach CG and Coach Norby in our Pirate Report. Also coming up, the American has hired a new commissioner. So we will hear some of the comments from that as time allows today here on the Patrick Johnson Show. Bethany Bradshaw has a new book out. Never Take This for Granted. In fact, it'll be out a week from tomorrow, but you can pre-order it at ecubaseballbook.com, I believe is the address. We'll double-check that. But you can go on there and pre-register to get the book ordered. It's about ECU baseball fans, the jungle, and the whole fan culture surrounding Pirate baseball. And that will be available for the public to buy when it's released next Friday. We're going to have Bethany on the show Tuesday, but I did want to give her a plug on that. Now, if you register to win, pre-register to buy a book, you'll be entered to win some fabulous prizes, including Coach LeClaire's Coaching Third book that Bethany wrote, and a copy of this book, obviously, you'll get. Bethany will sign both for you. And then there's a Carter Cunningham powder blue jersey or powder purple jersey you can get, lavender, the light purple. And there's a trading card for Parker Bird that I believe is autographed as well you could get. So you could go ahead and pre-order all of that now, and it will hopefully be something that you will want to be a part of your collection. But I think it's going to be a hot seller. And again, the name of the book is Never Take This for Granted, ecubaseballbook.com, or just go to bethanybradshaw.com, and you can get routed there. But that comes out a week from tomorrow. It is Pig Out Weekend, and we'll have some news on that for you in just a second. As we mentioned, Andrew Bays is going to join us here in a few minutes on the Patrick Johnson Show this afternoon. You know, we had all these great plans, all these things we were going to talk about today. Dom Kosolke, by the way, is with us. Punch Dom up there, everybody. Let's get a look at that fine-looking young man. Dom is going to have coming up in just a little bit. There he is, a young-looking Howard Stern.
What's up, my man?
Is Dom Kosolke.
I think we're going to lose.
No, Dom, we're winners today. We're going to win today.
We're winners
next
season.
The day.
I think we're going to lose.
I'm feeling some wins next season, man. I just wasn't confident last season, and I know that cracked
you
up when it happened live.
Oh, it was so good. It was so good. Look at Dom in there running the board. He's got his team jersey on. He's a team player. I love it.
Big team player.
So Dom will have it up. Big-time team player. Dom's logged a long day today, like many of us have, as he was here this morning. Okay. I'm looking. Dom, I wanted to bring you in, too, because I was talking to somebody today who is, I think they're 20.
Okay.
And it was right around the time. How old are you, Dom, by the way?
21. I just turned 21 this Valentine's Day.
That's right. I remember that.
I think we're going to lose.
No, Dom was a winner that night. And alcohol had never touched those innocent lips until he turned 21. They still may not have.
Yeah, who says they've touched them?
But I don't think they have, but you're a good, clean living young man. But so you're around this age of this person I was talking to today, and I was telling them about O.J. Simpson. Do you know anything about O.J. Simpson, Dom?
I know the basis. I know the basics about it, and I
okay.
Well, just ask me away.
Well, what do you know? I want to.
I know the that I think he killed his wife, and I just. That's pretty much, and I know he was a football player.
I think we're going to lose.
We might in court. No. So OJ, you're right. OJ, partially, OJ was acquitted for murder, but he was charged in the killing of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman, her friend, back in the mid 90s. And as I was explaining this to this person today, this young person, I was telling them, you know, OJ was sort of the first major sports figure to be a TV and Hollywood star at a high level. Yeah, athletes had endorsements and were in commercials and print ads at the time, but OJ, who was so big in the 60s and 70s, was the preeminent great football player, but a preeminent advertising pitch man, for lack of a better term. And he worked with NBC. I may have worked with ABC a little bit with Monday Night Football, but I know he worked with NBC exclusively because Norm MacDonald got into some hot water at NBC because of all of the O.J. Simpson jokes from the SNL weekend updates in the middle 1990s. And O.J. Was in the Naked Gun movies. He had still kind of fancied himself as a pitch man. All the way into the 90s, and then his wife was killed, Goldman was killed, he was arrested for murder, and then it was the trial of the century. 9/11, probably you weren't born yet either, Dom, so that's like a seminal moment in my life, because you remember everything about that day. I know there are people in my dad's generation and Henry's generation who remember the Kennedy killing, the Kennedy assassination and where they were, and they remember the time very vividly. I remember where I was for the OJ verdict. And this was, I wouldn't say 24-hour news was in its infancy during the trial, but it was the type of thing, I think Court TV ended up spawning out of this, because the every moment of the trial that could be televised was televised. And Greta Van Susteren, who I think now is with News Nation, I think. She's with one of those channels. She may not be with News Nation. She may be with another offshoot channel, conservative channel. But Greta Van Susteren was sort of born out of the OJ trial because she was a lawyer and was one of the legal analysts. I think Jim Moran was the other, and he went on to have a TV career. But point is, this was cable news's first wall-to-wall kind of thing for weeks, months on end, and this was just consumed heavily. The networks weren't showing the soaps. They'd cut away and go to the certain parts of the trial. And I remember I was in a place, we used to get off-campus lunch at Parrott Academy, which means we could go off campus and eat lunch, you know, as long as you were back in time for when classes came back. Did you all have that, Dom, in Wilmington? Were you able to go off campus, or was it too much traffic in Wilmington for the students to go off campus for lunch?
I wasn't allowed to, but some people did anyways.
You may have.
I definitely did. There was a Mexican restaurant and a tropical smoothie across the street, and it's just a quick walk. So we were allowed to. I always got back for class. I was a good student. So,
but you weren't. You didn't like get in pile into your buddy's car and drive somewhere. And I mean, That's the kind of thing we would used to do. Yeah. And you know, there's nothing around Parrott if you've ever been there from a restaurant perspective. So you did have to go about 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, depending on who was driving into town. Anyway, there was this great place called Billy's Drive-In that we all used to eat. I forget the name of the original name of the restaurant. I'm sure if there's any of my Kinston homies listening or watching, they can text me and tell me. I cannot remember that today, but it was Billy's when I was coming up, and it looked like that it was the type of place, if they dropped the food on the floor, it would be better. So Billy's had these great, greasy, big boy cheeseburgers. They were called the big boy. They were awesome. And all the kids would go there. And I never did because I was not a smoker in high school, but certain people, they'd let the kids smoke in the Billy's. It's torn down now. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. So kids would smoke in Billy's when they would go to off campus.
Doesn't happen anymore.
Anyway, no, that would not happen. Well, Billy's is not around anymore, so it wouldn't happen. Anyway, I watched the OJ verdict in Billy's.
Oh, wow, okay.
Because it happened around midday. It happened around the time we were in our off-campus lunch back in 1995. It was October 95. I remember it to this day. And split, even in Billy's, was the reaction. Some people cheered, some people groaned, tears of disbelief. And I just remember watching this whole spectacle in front of me unfold. And that was as fascinating as the trial had been in many ways. So, and then there's the Bronco chase, which happened during the NBA Finals in June of 94, the game between the Rockets and the Knicks. There was a 30 for 30 on that whole day. The series that ESPN and ABC did a few years ago, I think they put it out during COVID, maybe the year before, about OJ's life was fascinating because it was everything, the good, the obviously horrible, and the factual. It was really a well-done thing that they did on OJ. But I mean, OJ was the big athlete. He was the Heisman winner, and it was indeed the trial of the century. And it was something that I don't think you'd ever forget if you're of that generation, because my point is I remembered exactly where I was, obviously during 9/11, but you remember where you were when the OJ verdict came out. It was wild. So OJ Simpson, dead of cancer. He had last posted before the Super Bowl on Twitter. He had infamously got on Twitter a few years ago. And there's been a lot of people having, some fun memes and some things today. But I mean, you have to remember that two people were killed and the murderer was never brought to justice. You know, I know OJ was found liable in civil court, had to pay millions of dollars, which I don't think he ever paid. There was also the other thing where he went in and bum rushed some guys in a hotel room to get some memorabilia back, and he served time for that. So, but never, since he wasn't convicted and he was acquitted, he never was brought to justice for the murder he was accused of, and never was the killer brought to justice in that case. So. That's the O.J. Simpson legacy, and again, he had not been active on social, which he would be from time to time, but they said pancreatic cancer got O.J. at the age of 76. The spring game is coming up on Saturday at 1 o'clock from Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. We're going to have a pregame program from noon to 1 here on 94.3 The Game with Jim Zocchi and Brian Bailey from Channel 9. Saturday will feature a car show that starts at 10. There'll be the Touch a Truck. This is all outside the stadium. The Kids Zone will be at the turf practice field. Autographs from 10 to 11:30. Spare Change will be performing at noon. Petey's birthday is at 11. That's always a lot of excitement and fun. And don't forget, there'll be a Team Boneyard tent out there. In fact, today is the last day you can silent or auction on the Team Boneyard auction to kick a field goal in the spring game. So you have until 8 o'clock to participate in that auction. If you go to teamboneyard.org, get the banners right up there for the 24 auction that Matt Slate told us about a couple days ago, earlier in the week. All right. Another update today from Pirate Athletics was 11,300 season tickets sold so far. That is a number that is higher than the number last year at this time by over 1,000. So that's a real positive as far as trying to get to the goal of 16,000 season tickets to be sold. All right, Andrew Bays will be with us in just a minute, ECU All-American punter. Bays will talk some Pirate football with us, the new quarterbacks, what he's looking forward to seeing. And we also have some news about one of our local volleyball teams that Andrew's going to tell us about and how you can help out with that. We'll have a Pirate report. Dom's going to have the latest from Augusta for you with the Masters before the technical meltdown here at Casa de Johnson. Bryson DeChambeau, last I saw, was leading with a 7-under score. I'll be on Talk of the Town hosting tomorrow. This is the Patrick Johnson Show, and we're going to be right back When we return, Andrew Bays will join us. We'll talk some Pirate spring football.
You ready for this?
Oh, I'm very ready. Okay, ready?
You ready?
Streaming to the world at 94.3thegame.com. This is the Patrick Johnson Show. Now in all his glory, here's the P-Man.
All right, welcome back. Thank you for being with us here this afternoon on the PJ Show. Andrew Bays is one of ECU's all-time greats, a Hall of Famer, All-American during his time in a Pirate uniform, and works as the analyst for Road Games now on the ECU Sports Network. Andrew joins us here to talk a little bit about the Pirate spring game and a big event coming up involving one of our local volleyball teams. Andrew is a volleyball dad. Thankfully, his daughter's got all their athletic prowess from their mother. All right, Bays, how are you, my friend?
How you doing, buddy? You got me?
I got you loud and clear. You've never Great. Sounded or looked any better than you do Thanks, right buddy. Now. So, hey, hope springs eternal. Yeah, it's great to see you. It's been a minute. Hope springs eternal whenever we get to the spring game. There's a different feel around this year, though, than last spring, and I think it's because there are two legitimate options at quarterback. I think the coaches were maybe smoking the hopium a little bit last year with the quarterback situation, and obviously it didn't pan out, and the season didn't pan out. But fans are going to get their first look at Garcia and Hauser. And I think they're going to be impressed. I know you've seen a few practices. What have you noticed?
Yeah, I've just noticed a definite, you know, value in competition. It's one thing that this Pirate football team lacked last year as they were going into the season. You know, they pretty much handed over the reins to Mason Garcia with the assumption that he was going to take it and lead the team. And I think they quickly realized late in spring and into the summer that was going to be an issue. And they were too far down the road to correct it. And, you know, painfully, as Pirate fans, we had to kind of watch what unfolded last season. And, you know, thankfully for the defense, you know, the defense really put forth a competitive effort throughout the season to make some games really competitive. You know, so a big key difference in these two quarterbacks, as you'll see immediately, is just a level of confidence between the two of them. I think, in addition, actually three of them. Jeter has, I know they don't talk much about it, but, you know, Jeter has done a great job this spring. The three of them are pulling each other along, and I'm a big believer of peer-based competition. You know, you get a couple guys in there, a few guys in there that are going to go at it every single day, not only, you know, on the practice field, but in the weight room and, you know, studying on film and, you know, having some kind of, you know, competition in the film room, who's doing, you know, a little bit better than the other one, who's got the edge at this time. It's only going to push them both along. And, you know, from what I saw at practice, the competition level is high. You know, the receiver group is buzzing around, a lot of new faces there. You know, the offensive line, I think for the most part, everybody's coming back. I know there's a big key piece in Darius Bell coming over from Maine, who's going to be a big piece of this interior line. And, you know, so they got a long way to go. They got an offense to learn under John David Baker, who's coming in. And really, I think these guys are probably well ahead of schedule in building this offense and getting things off the ground.
We got Andrew Bays with us here on the Patrick Johnson Show. As you look at, seen the offense, and I know it's an install, and you know it's as they piled on here today, being the 14th of the 15 practices, more and more and more is being installed, if you will. From what you've seen, though, the bones of this, the nuts and bolts, the foundation, is it a, I guess, just faster pace from what you've been able to observe so far, and is it truly sort of a modern offense in many ways?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're accustomed East Carolina for some, you know, aside from the last couple of years, you know, quick paced, pass oriented offense. And I think that's where we're headed again is, you know, tempo, up tempo offense, get the ball out quick, you know, quick to the line of scrimmage and try to set the tone offensively. You know, last year we saw a completely different mix offense. I think just because of the deficits that we had on the offensive side of the ball, it was really an effort to slow the game down, to try to keep our defense off the field. And I think offensively, that was the best thing they could do. But, you know, moving forward to next year, it's going to be a completely different beast. It's a higher tempo, ball out quick. And some of these receivers, I was really impressed with the NC State kid that came over, Anthony Smith. Reports are that he's got a lot of wiggle, and that's definitely going to be a big impact on this offense moving forward. And you know, going back, I know you followed a lot of those press conferences last year. Donnie was always commenting about Kerry King on how big a miss, you know, his injury was for that offense. And it's going to be really good to get him back.
We got with us Andrew Bays here on the Patrick Johnson Show as we talk Pirate football, and the start of the spring game will be at 1 o'clock on Saturday at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium. What do punters do during the spring game?
Eat some snacks and wait for fourth down. You know, it's funny. You know, Coach Logan was. You know, he was not a spring game guy. He did not like having to show his offense in front of a public. So, you know, a lot of the spring games I played in were not the format they're going to have on Saturday, which is truly splitting the team up and, you know, letting your senior leaders basically create a draft. We never had that. We always had just like a practice. And so, you know, I know our fan base was really never crazy about some of our spring games, but I think everyone, you know, in a spring game type atmosphere, it is fun. You know, there's a little bit of trash talk as the week goes on, especially when the rosters get solidified. You know, I know they have a lot of fun with it. I believe last year, you know, the winning team got a steak dinner, and I think the losing team had to serve them or something like that. So, you know, they have fun. And I mean, my spring games were pretty uneventful, and you know, a lot of chit chat and a lot of snacks, and you know, figuring out what we were going to be doing that night.
Well, you know, Coach is the winner either way; he gets the dinner regardless. Coach Houston does. So, Chad Stevens and Rajay Harris are the captains on one side. Shane Calhoun, and Siobhan Revel are the captains on the other side. So it's up to them how they draft. And I don't know quite how they're going to do the quarterbacks. I guess the quarterbacks are kind of just it's like the pickup in the backyard. I'm the quarterback for both teams. It might be a little bit of that. Who knows? But the point is that you'll get to see both of these quarterbacks. Again, there'll be coverage on 94.3 The Game and WNCT.com will be streaming it from noon until 1. So that'll be happening ahead of the spring game. Hey, Bays. With this new world that we're in with NIL and the portal and all that, I know we've talked a little bit about it in the past, and, you know, out of this spring time period, there'll be a period where players can enter the portal and get out of the situation they're in if they don't feel like they're going to play. You know, when you look at kind of the landscape now, it just seems like it's something new every day with NIL. The portal is the wild, wild west, even though they've put these, you know, time windows on it to get in. There will be certain rosters. You won't know what they're going to fully look like until maybe July.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I think there was news a couple of days ago where they're even trying to loosen the transfer rules even further. As it pertains to academics and some of those things. So it is, you know, unfortunately, it is the landscape that we're in. And, you know, I think for fans on Saturday with the spring game, with that in mind, I mean, you look at our roster and it's just very deep in transfers. And, you know, I think you really, at this phase of the game, you have to be patient. You know, you want to see some things. You want to go out there Saturday and see some things. You want to see guys compete. You want to see some athleticism. You want to see some bodies being moved around. And, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of light on the quarterbacks, but, you know, they're still very early in this. It's just weeks. And these guys are coming in from different systems, and offensive coordinator's brand new. So, Yeah, man, you really don't know how this thing's going to look until, you know, deeper into the summer. But I will tell you, you know, I'm sure you've observed it, but, you know, Coach Houston seems much calmer and much more relaxed in these press conferences, you know, this spring. And it was a polar opposite of what we were seeing in the fall. Those guys were just so tense going through that season, trying to figure out, you know, every single week, trying to figure out the best foot forward to get through the week. And so I think they have a little bit of breathing, feel like they have a little bit of breathing room with this roster. You know, he did make a comment, you know, he's worried about the two teams being diluted, you know, as he separates them into two teams. And that kind of speaks to depth. So, you know, depth as you're rebuilding these program or rebuilding this roster and trying to fill in the pieces, you know, depth obviously is the biggest concern because you have so many parts and pieces leaving, you're bringing parts and pieces in and you're hoping that, you know, your underclassmen, your freshmen, your sophomores can fill out that depth. And you're really not going to know that until you get, you know, into the summer.
Andrew Bays, analyst for Pirate Football on the ECU Sports Network with us here. The four that were the captains we mentioned are injured, so they're not participating or rehabbing. They're not participating in the spring. With Rajay Harris and Calhoun to a degree, getting those guys back and healthy in the fall, you feel like Calhoun's maybe due a bigger year, and it'd be really good to see Rajay Harris back, you know, explosive on the scene and perhaps, you know, back with kind of the vigor we saw prior to the injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a tough injury to come back from. And, you know, you need time to not only let body heal, but, you know, to regain confidence in that joint. And so, explosiveness, I see a quick twitch there. You know, Javius Bond obviously came on strong, you know, first half of the year and, you know, had an unfortunate injury where we lost him a little bit. But I tell you what, you were talking about Shane Calhoun. It was good last week to see Casey Kelly buzzing around that tight end position. You know, again, you know, the tight end position is going to be used in this offense and going to have to be deep at that position to rotate some players and stay fresh. So, you know, the running back room is important, but I wouldn't discount that tight end room either.
We're talking with Andrew Bays here. Bays, defensively, you know what you're getting out of what Blake Harrell brings to the equation and the tremendous job he's done. I think it's great that he's back as your DC because he could end up being a hot name sooner or later because of just the work he's done. And look, ECU was competitive last season because of the defense. So there's some holes to fill. There's some question marks, edge rusher, secondary, as there always seems to be. But it'll be interesting to see how this defense comes out and performs on Saturday. Again, there's the concern about it diluted with some key guys, you know, sitting this one out. But, you know, still, I think it's an opportunity. If this is what we have come to expect out of ECU defensively, they'll be flying around the football, and it's going to be a defense that's predicated on speed.
Yeah, I mean, with the work that Mike Houston and Blake Harrell have done on this defense over the last couple of years, I mean, I was really surprised. I'm sure, as were others in our fan base, that Blake Harrell was not poached away. I thought he did an incredible job. You know, as tough as that season was last year, the one thing as a former athlete, you know, student athlete within that program, one thing I was super proud of was, you know, even as the season got long, that defense was competing at a very high level. And those players never really gave up at any point in the season. And that's a testament to, you know, the work Mike Houston is doing with that defense and the work that Blake Harrell's doing on that defense and the trust that they have in those guys. It was pretty easy for that defense to lay over or lie over at some point last season, and they didn't. And
oh,
they
compete.
And, you know, the thing I've seen a couple practices I've been at, they're buzzing all over the field right now. And, you know, they probably have the edge on this offense. You know, when you go out and watch practice or watch some of these scrimmages, you know, the defense definitely has an edge, but you know, it's that new offense getting off the ground. But I mean, you know, on the edge, Sam Danka making plays, you know, JD Lampley making plays, secondary's been solid. You know, you got new moving parts at linebacker too. And those, you know, you got some guys coming back. You also got Damian Wilson from Mizzou coming back. And that safety group and secondary, I mean, it is deep. So I think the defense is going to be fine. I think they're solid. That defensive front, Deontay Johnson was just an animal. And Surad Ware right alongside, I know that wasn't a name that we called often, but he was a difference maker on that defensive front. You know, Deontay Johnson, obviously a fun player to watch and constantly in the backfield, you know, as he always does. But, you know, there were guys that I was fearful that we were going to lose in the portal. And, you know, a lot of these guys came back, and that's a testament to the coaching staff and their belief in this program. And I'm happy to see it.
All right. Baze, as we mentioned, is a volleyball dad. He and my guy, TJ Long, are volleyball dads. And East ECJVC, their 15U team, has earned a bid to the USAV Girls Junior National Championship in Las Vegas in July. I hope it's indoors. Actually, it probably won't be. But winning, they won a big tournament. Tell us about what they won and tell us about how folks can get involved and help them, because I'm sure there's some this takes money to head out there and play in this type of event.
It does. So this is the East Carolina Junior Volleyball Club here in Greenville. It's an indoor volleyball club. Girls ranging from, starter girls are, you know, 8, 9 years old. They start traveling at the age of 12, and they go all the way up to their senior year 18s. And it's a club that my family, we've been a big part of since my oldest was 12 years old. So we've been going at it for 6 years, and you know, we're really proud of the effort that they went down to the Big South national qualifier down in Atlanta. And typically it's a tournament that the girls kind of struggles in, and you know, our girls, for whatever reason, they put forth a pretty solid effort and ended up winning the tournament and earning a national bid to that big national tournament in Las Vegas. So, you know, right now there's no plans for a fundraiser or anything like that. And that more will come to that, you know, a little bit later. But yeah, that's going to be, thank God it's indoors in Vegas in July. But,
right,
you know, Patrick, it's crazy, man. You go to that Big South tournament in Atlanta, and there's over, and just in their age group alone in 15s, there's over 300 teams, and there's about 200 courts that are going in that. If anybody's used or has seen that Atlanta Convention Center downtown, it's one of the biggest buildings in the United States, and it's just loaded with tens of thousands of volleyball kids and parents. And you know, so for our team out of little old Greenville here to go down there and make a big impact, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, they won over Easter weekend, and we'll talk about that as we get closer to the date and they leave. But congratulations, and your oldest daughter is playing sand at Tampa at a gorgeous campus. So I know you guys are really proud.
Yeah, she's down. You know, they got a national ranking. They worked their way up to 19th in the country, and they're going to be playing for their basically their Division II NCAA tournament this weekend in Tavares, Florida. And so we'll be heading down there tomorrow night to cheer on the Spartans.
And look, that ranking, that's everybody in beach. That's just not that level.
That's, right.
That's everybody that plays beach or sand is ranked in that poll. So for Tampa to get in the top 20, that's huge. Hey, Baze, looking forward to Saturday, and looking forward to your thoughts after the spring game. And we'll catch up very soon, my friend. Thank you for the time here, and congrats to your youngest daughter and her teammates with EC JVC and the 15U team winning the event down in Atlanta. That's big stuff.
As always, Patrick, thank you very much, and go Pirates.
Yep, There he goes, the great Andrew Bays. Awesome to talk to Bays. All right, let's go to Dom Kasulki now. What's going on at Augusta National with the Masters? Tiger on the course. And last check, Bryson DeChambeau with the win from the or with the lead from the Live Tour at 7-under. An update from Dom and more right now in our Pirate Report in 94.3 The Game Sports Update.
Thank you, Patrick. Weather delayed this morning's start of the Masters. The Augusta National Golf Club started the tournament around 10:30 a.m. Eastern. Bryson DeChambeau, as you just said, is sitting at first place with 7-under par. He's 3 strokes ahead of the next best, Danny Willett, Scottie Scheffler, and Will Zalatoris. Jon Rahm will be looking to add another green jacket to his list of accolades when he defends his title at the 2024 Masters Tournament. Rahm won last year's tournament after finishing atop the leaderboard at 12-under par. Rahm is right now is even and tied for 30th place. Tiger Woods is making his return, and Woods is hoping to break his tie with Sam Snead for most tour championships. Tiger Woods is also even and tied in 30th place. Freshman left-handed pitcher Ethan Norby turned in the finest relief outing of his young career as number 9 East Carolina defeated Old Dominion 7-5 to earn a split of the season series. Norby picked up his second win as he tossed a career-high 4 2/3 innings and fanned 10.
I'll do whatever, honestly. I'm just trying to go win some games. I'm going to be honest with you. But just whatever I can do for the team, that's the biggest thing.
The Pirates faced a 2-run deficit in the first inning but quickly tied it up in the home half of the frame before holding the Monarchs to just 1 run after the second inning. East Carolina will host Charlotte in a 3-game series this weekend. East Carolina football will practice today ahead of Saturday's Purple Gold game at 1 o'clock in Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. A member of the ECU women's basketball team is entering the portal. Freshman Karina Gordon posted the news to her X account Wednesday morning. She averaged 6.4 points, 1.9 rebounds, and 1.7 assists this season. She saw more playing time and started several games after the loss of Micah Dennis and Sanaya Johnson. That'll do it for your scoreboard or your update here on The Patrick Johnson Show, and we'll be right back after this quick break on 94.3 The Game.
And now, Patrick Johnson with today's Pirate Report on the flagship station of the ECU Pirates, 94.3 The Game.
Pirates kept it rolling yesterday with a victory over ODU after falling behind early, and East Carolina able to mash out the win. And it was Connor Norby in the 7-5 victory, picking up his win out of the pen, going 4 2/3 with 10 strikeouts. Coach Godwin talked about the Pirate pitching after the game.
Corey, just I'm sure his nerves were a little bit much, but man, he was good last week in pitcher versus hitter. We just need him to get his heartbeat back to what it was in pitcher versus hitter, but he's going to be good for us. And then Danny came in and kind of settled things down. But man, Ethan Norby, man, come out of the bullpen, punch out 10 guys. I mean, he was electric, and he only threw 76 pitches in 4 2/3 is impressive.
Let's hear cut 3 from Coach Godwin here, Dom, where he talks about things got hairy, but it was Norby that pulled the Pirates through.
Got a little hairy there at the end, you know. Of course, you don't ever want to put the tying run on base, but we had to play, a little Russian roulette there. Coach O, and it worked out. Norby's just hard on left-handers, and, so we thought it was a good matchup, and it worked out well for us.
Let's hear from Ethan Norby now on what was working for him last night.
Mainly my fastball command, just pounding both sides of the plate was really working, and then we just worked the slider off of that.
Norby said he took it one batter at a time.
Keep going after him one batter at a time, but ultimately I just wanted the game. Like, they kept telling me, it's your game, let's go.
And Connor also talked about that slider he referenced a second ago.
I'll do whatever, honestly. I'm just trying to go win some games. I'm going to be honest with you. But just whatever I can do for the team, that's the biggest thing.
Wrong cut, excuse me.
Dom, do we have cut 6? Yeah. Let's hit cut 6 there real quick.
Yeah, I was out of order. I got you.
I've been backing it up a couple of times, just trying to stay into J-Dub. He just gives me good eyesight to where I should go to. But they've trained me very well. We tried not to touch with it too much, but it's really worked.
So that is Connor Norby. That is our Pirate Report as far as ECU goes. Today, Tim Pernetti was officially introduced to the media and held a press conference as the new commissioner of the AAC. And he talked about a lot of things, college football, the playoff expansion, where he wants to take the American. We have some cuts from that. Talked about what he thinks the foundation of the job as commissioner of the American needs to be. Cut eight, hit it.
It's important that the foundation is one thing, which is trying to get creative to generate and create new resources for the institutions. The investment and the challenges and the changes continue to accelerate, and I think we need to do some things differently in order to keep up with it.
That's interesting. I kind of read into that. He's talking revenue streams there potentially. So he, of course, comes from IMG and was with IMG College for a little bit before running the IMG Academy. So he certainly knows about media rights, one would say. This is Pernetti addressing the divide of the so-called P5, now P4, and the G5.
You know, I think the position of the American Athletic Conference is well known and supported by a lot of the relationships and the media agreement and the investment that's been made. And it's positioned where it's positioned. It won't stay there forever if we don't accelerate and do some things differently. It was Power 5, then it was Power 2. And I think for me, I just can't keep up, with any of it. And when I look at college football, to me, college football is college football. Are there different levels of competition and levels of play? Of course there are. Is there financial disparity? We know that. We don't control a lot of that stuff. But what I will try to focus on with the staff and with the schools will be, all right, what do we control? Like, what is the stomach for taking some big swings? That, honestly, Ralph, was a hugely important part of the interview process. I really pressed to know more about how interested the presidents and the membership was in doing things differently. And I feel great about, their interest in trying some of these things down the road.
And what those things will be, I'm very interested to learn about, because I think you can't stand pat. Not that the American has, but it does seem like at times things have been a little more reactionary rather than forward-leaning. Now, a lot of that is you're in a situation where you've had members that have desires beyond the conference, and if they have lobbied and worked and get an invitation and more dollars are possible, you can't blame them. I know UCF, in talking to their radio guy last year, he was in town to do the baseball series. There was some concern about, the budget and being able to keep pace, and they had a pretty big budget for the American. This is a broadcast thing, and it's very small, but it speaks to they're making cuts, even though they're getting all this TV money, but they utilize a sideline presence in their ESPN Plus, now Big 12 Now, or whatever that version of ESPN Plus is for the Big 12, they utilize a sideline reporter in all the sports that they produce. And they have now made those student interns. Now, may make no never mind, but if you have 18 different people interning on a broadcast and supposedly being a sideline reporter, I've seen people who are getting paid to do sidelines that are hideous in their work and their on-air presence, so I can only imagine what interns are like. Not all the great interns like we've had here over the years that have become superstars like Dom.
Exactly.
On 94.3 The Game.
I think we're going to lose.
Got a few good interns.
Except for that moment.
We had Chris as well.
Had some good ones over the years.
Mr. Cookie.
Chris was good. Ben started out as an intern. I think Pilk did.
I think so we all really
generally
started
our
out
interns
as,
get hired.
Yeah. Well, not all of them, but if you make it, you start as an intern.
Yeah. Let's skip ahead to 12 here. Let's hear from Tim Pernetti, the new commissioner of the American, today, talking about the importance of football.
Going forward, football has to be a vital and important part of what we do, because the reality is if we can maximize resources and investment around football, it supports everything else everybody is doing on campus. Okay. I would argue that basketball is equally important. The profile, the visibility, what do we love about the NCAA tournament? We love the fact that a school like Fairleigh Dickinson up the street from where I grew up in New Jersey can make a run in the tournament 2 years ago. So, that's the part. Football has to be important because it will give us the ability to generate more resources for everything.
Absolutely, and I'm glad he said something about basketball there, and I hope the Pirate fan base is listening with both ears widely open. We've got to start treating basketball as a conference and here on the institutional level like it needs to be treated and funded and supported because it can be a revenue generator at a time when you need revenue. Pernetti on what he wants the identity of the conference to be, number 13.
The things that attracted me to the conference were, there's a couple words, like grit, resilience. Things have changed dramatically, like you said, but the conference has responded and reloaded and it's done everything it's needed to do. But those things in particular attracted me to it. What should it be in the future? We want this conference to be known as the most innovative conference in collegiate athletics. And innovate's an overused word sometimes, but elevating the enterprise to do things differently, to take big swings. And naturally, that's going to require the same factors, grit, resilience, taking some chances on some things. I'm convinced that the group that I met with that hired me into this job is ready to do that. And I'm excited about it.
And last one here, let's hit 16, and this is Pernetti on negotiating future media rights deals for the American.
You know, the best thing about like collegiate athletics is the debate. I worked in pro sports. It does not feel the same way. You know, and this is the stuff that really energizes me about the future. I don't think anybody can predict that. The reality is this. This bubble everybody's been talking about around sports rights that's going to burst and the networks are going to band together and the streaming partners, they're going to pay less. That's never going to happen. Because the reality is sports is the last bastion of unscripted drama that exists. And it's valuable. It'll always be valuable. Our job is to put a great product on ESPN. So that's where we have to have our focus. And as it relates to getting to the next round of negotiations, whenever that is, my sense is you have to go to that table with something that's additive to what you had the first time around. And that's what we'll prepare to do.
You know, he's right. Sports is the last appointment television. We started, you know, talking about OJ and how that was 24-hour coverage and you couldn't miss it on your TV. Now you'd watch it on this. You'd watch it on your phone now. And now sports is the only appointment television that exists out there in the linear form and in the streaming form. All right. Thanks today to Andrew Bays. Great job by Dom Kosolke. And back in the morning hosting Talk of the Town. Looking forward to that. And we'll be back with Mike Mullis tomorrow leading you into Pirate Baseball with the Patrick Johnson Show. Have a great rest of your evening. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on a full Friday tomorrow. Take care, everybody.